Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
One of the areas of afterlife evidence that I paid no attention to until recently was that of physical mediumship. I mean, the number of good physical mediums regularly sitting for the public is fewer than the fingers of one hand. So how important could it be? Well, my beloved friends Victor and Wendy Zammit have helped me to see that physical mediums and what they do are very important. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. What Victor and Wendy have shown me is that physical mediumship, properly understood, is one of the greatest proofs of the survival of death that we have. And our wonderful guest this week, all the way from New Zealand, is David Thompson himself. David is arguably the world's greatest living physical medium. Welcome, David. I'm thrilled to have you with us. I'd just like to start by telling people my experience with this was my first seance at the conference that we attended in September, and I didn't know what to expect. I'm telling everybody the fact that some people were confused about it is my fault because I didn't understand that it would be confusing. But we'll talk about that today and explain, as I've also explained in a recent blog post, just why things had to be as they had to be. But the thing to emphasize about this seance was that we had the most beautiful, amazing reunions between people who were sitting in the circle and loved ones who materialized in the room. That's what's so incredible and fantastic about these physical seances. People actually materialize. And that's something which most Americans have no idea about. In fact, most people in the world have no idea about. But it's a little strange. What happens in a seance, and all of this, David and I will talk about why it has to be done this way. Our friend David gets tied to a chair and tied in such a way that it's just, I would not even want to be tied down to that extent. He's gagged and the gag is fastened. He has this sweater put on and that's all fastened with special plastic ties. He's just immobilized in a chair, and the chair is inside a box with curtains. Then the room is sealed. Everybody's very careful to make sure there's no way that anyone could get in or out. No light can get in or out. And then the room is darkened. We have people sitting around the room in a horseshoe around David, holding hands in the dark, and loud music starts to play. And after a little bit, a man appears. Now, you can't see him, but you sure can hear him. His name is William, and we'll talk about William with David and who he is and why he's so important. But what happens then is just a whole series of people, and they're talking, and they're walking around, and you can hear it. And it's just it blows your mind. It's an amazing experience. We'll talk in a bit about the specific reunions that happened in the seance that I attended. But first, let's talk with David about why it needs to be so different from what you or I might expect would be, you know, acceptable. So David, why is it dark?
There's a few reasons. First of all, the substance that's used for the process of materialization, which is ectoplasm, is very light sensitive. Ectoplasm is predominantly from the pancreas of the medium. So it's predominantly insulin and other elements of bodily fluid. And when you expose it to anything outside of that, the normal physical body is exposed. It's an aspect of danger.
Wow, how interesting. What happens then, as I understand it, is that this substance is produced by the medium. It's concentrated in this space, which is why the curtains. That's what Wendy told us 2 weeks ago. I mean, we had Victor and Wendy Zammit on 2 weeks ago, and they talked in detail about exactly why all of this had to be happening. And anyone who hasn't heard that podcast should certainly go back and listen, because they will reinforce everything David is saying. They have been sitting in 200 seances of David's over a 10-year period and studied him in detail and feel that he is not just perfectly legitimate, but they feel he is one of the two or three most important, most developed physical mediums in the world. So, David, to have their good housekeeping seal is, you couldn't ever do better than that. So I'm excited that I'm going to get to do this again with you next year and get a better sense of how it is. So anyway, what happens is David is in he's in trance, very deep trance. His body is producing this material. And his primary guide, named William, who has a great boomy voice, he lived in the 19th century in England, and that's what his accent is, very strongly. He becomes the master of ceremonies, and he starts, he talks to us, he explains things to us, and then he starts bringing forth some of the loved ones. You're not aware of any of this, though, right? You are just in trance.
That's correct. I'm not aware of anything that takes place in any seance or trance demonstration.
I think it's unfair that you don't get to experience this amazing stuff, but that's okay if you don't mind. While you're sitting there, then in this particular case, we had three people come forward. One of them was the grandfather of Suzanne Wilson, who is, I think, the best psychic medium that I've ever met. And she has confirmed to me that not only was that her grandfather's voice, and she was very close to her grandfather, but she said she could smell him. He came and he touched her. It was a very, very emotional reunion for her.
Yeah.
We had George. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. You know, I met Suzanne briefly after the seance, and she sort of said that her grandfather came through. And I have to say, I've got a lot of respect for Suzanne as a medium because during the seminar, a friend of mine had a reading with her, and they're very, very impressed, very impressed. So, you know, in my mind, Suzanne Wilson holds a lot of credibility. And you know, often when mediums are quite well known in their field of work and are very good at what they do, they tend not to get messages from people in the spirit world because other mediums that sometimes feel a little bit maybe overawed that they don't want to give someone of maybe her caliber a message. So for me, I'm really happy that she got that. And, you know, I think everybody needs sometimes just to know that they're loved and watched over.
That's absolutely right. But to have someone, the other reunion that was so really memorable was a young man who had killed himself came through and was materialized, went to his mother and started talking to her. He took her hand, he kissed her on the forehead. She said later that was absolutely his voice, that was him. He was saying how sorry he was that he had killed himself, that he was all right now. I mean, there was not a dry eye in the place. It was so overwhelmingly emotional. So, yes, that could be done by a mental medium, by a spiritual medium. Someone like Suzanne could certainly bring him through, too. But it's very different to hear a spiritual medium saying, well, your son says this, he says that, he's giving you a virtual kiss. That's so different from what you do, David. There he is in the room. He is that people can touch and people can be right there with the people that they've gone on, and they can come back and be in the room with you. There have been children, according to Wendy, children come and sit on their parents' laps and play with mom's jewelry. And wow, pets come through. They hear their dog barking the way it always did, and then it jumps in their lap. This is something most people should have no clue that this is even possible. And there it is, and you're doing it in your home circles probably all the time, right? How often do you sit in your home circle?
Well, actually, Roberta, that's quite interesting because when we do sit, we haven't been sitting lately because obviously I've moved recently. But when we do sit, everything that people experience in the seance room doesn't happen in the home circle, because the home circle is more a place where the spirit world can feel as if they can experiment. They're in a safe environment that is safe for the medium. They work behind the scenes to continue to develop the vibrational link between our world and their world. So,
how interesting. It's a tune-up, kind of.
I mean, we don't have trumpets in the home circle. I'm not strapped in. I'm not gagged. None of that takes place because, obviously, there's no necessity. There's two reasons why we use restraints in a guest seance. And that's, first of all, so everybody in the room is satisfied when the two independent checkers have checked the binds that I'm securely bound into the chair. And also, the other reason for it is it has been documented in the past, not with myself, but with other mediums, that if a medium's in a deep state of trance and they're not strapped into the chair and the spirit control is within the room and moving around, because they're connected by the autonomic system of the medium may actually get up and follow the spirit person around like a puppet would do.
Wow, how interesting. And that would be very dangerous for you if you started to do that.
Exactly. So, you know, obviously in the home circle, that's not too much of a problem, and that often doesn't, that sort of thing wouldn't happen. But, you know, it's the strapping in process in a seance is, it's not for me, it's not for the spirit world, it's for the people present.
Yes, and it certainly was very dramatic for all of us to watch it happen. But so when you're in a home circle, it's the same sitters generally, right? And pretty much?
Yep. We have the same people. And, you know, I'm very lucky. I've got what we call them honorary circle members, but really they're actually circle members in different parts of the world. So when I go and work overseas, like I'm going to be in next month, I'm going to go to the UK and to Holland. So my circle members overseas will actually come and sit. I mean, I'm pretty lucky. In December, I'm going to be doing a week of trance and physical mediumship with some other tutors at a college in Holland called the Swanhof, and four of my circle members will be there. So one of them comes from America, one comes from Sweden, and two come from the UK. So, you know, I class myself as very, very lucky to have dedicated, caring, loving people around me.
That is, you certainly are. But that is such a gift to you, because my understanding is that if you have the same energies consistently in the home circle, that it's a much more efficient way to do this development than if you have strangers, right? It's just, it requires those people to be there and to be supporting you and with their energies.
Yeah. See, vibration is everything. That's the way you have to look at it. In any form of mediumship, the vibration is everything. And more so, is it susceptible to influence by our side of life than in a physical seance. In a home circle, the sitter's vibration, the home circle members are known quantities to the spirit world, so they can try the experiments, they can do things that ordinarily they wouldn't be able to do, maybe in a home circle, in a guest's seance. So it's when you know it's a kind of a double-edged sword. When you do a public seance, you're doing it to give people that proof, to give those reunions to people that have lost loved ones. But the double-edged sword is also, you know, that the vibration that is taken into that room, because it's not a known quantity, could affect the quality of the actual communication. And that's why I personally seek people. It's not that I think in my mind, oh, I'm going to put that person there because I like them and that person there. It's purely done on influence from William. As the people are coming into the room, I see where their vibration is and get directed to where to sit them to get the optimum for the vibration for the seance in the actual seance room.
Yeah,
no other reason.
That's fascinating. Yeah, it was very, very carefully set up where the people would be. So we've answered the question about darkness. We have to have the darkness because ectoplasm, which stays attached to the physical medium's body, is very sensitive to light. It's been described as pouring, you know, liquid acid on snow to have light come into the room. And unexpectedly, having the light come into the room when so much ectoplasm is out has actually killed mediums in the past, because the ectoplasm will just pull right back into the medium's body with such violence that it can injure the medium and cause death.
Helen Duncan was a classic case of that.
Yes.
You know, what a travesty. What a travesty.
There was a raid. The police thought it would be a good idea to raid a physical seance. So they rushed in and turned on the lights. And this poor woman was so badly injured that she died in hospital.
Yeah, so, internal bleeding.
Isn't that terrible? So
that's murder. It's murder, really.
Of course it's murder. And it's stupidity as well on such a profound level that it beggars description. Yeah. So that's why it is so important that the room be sealed, that it be guarded, everything done to keep the medium safe, because there is poor David sitting there totally oblivious to what is going on, allowing this process, allowing spirit to use this process to create the bodies again of people who have died in the room. And it's a tremendous gift that he gives to all of us that he does this. And he's got to be kept safe through the process. So that explains a lot of what Americans would find, you know, unusual about seances.
Yeah.
I understand that it's possible for red light to be used very selectively, but it probably will mean that it takes so much of the energy out of the room that it probably will mean there'll be no reunions. People have told me that they have rarely been in. There was, who was it? Donna Smith Moncrief said she watched William's fingers materialize in some ectoplasm. He was showing her in low red light that this is how it works, and she was fascinated by that. She just was amazed by that.
Yeah, you know, Roberta, there's been hundreds of things, you know, not all of them are documented on the internet of things like that have taken place, you know. I mean, I've personally got some thermal imaging camera footage of one of our seances, and you can see ectoplasm being exuded, and you can actually see it actually coming out. But, you know, those sort of things, it's not that we don't want to share. It's that we want to compile enough evidence so eventually when it is shared, you know, there isn't going to be the people that say, oh, it's got to be this, it's got to be that, you know. As I said before, you know, we try and be as transparent in our seances as possible, you know, and we try our utmost to give people that understanding that what is taking place actually is what it is.
Another thing people thought was strange was that there was very loud music played at the start. And that also, the Zamet said, was necessary because it raises the spiritual vibration in the room. It raises the energy in the room and makes it easier for these for our dead loved ones to come forward. That's right?
Yeah, it's all done to maximize the vibration so that the communication takes place. And, you know, sometimes the vibration expectation that people bring into the seance room is quite large. So they need the music, they need the upliftment, they need the sound to supersede any vibration that might impede the communication.
Fascinating. And apparently this is something which, according to Wendy, as she talked about this 2 weeks ago with us, this is something which is as exciting on the side where our dead are as it is to us.
Amazingly.
And
you imagine
some
if you
of them don't believe it's possible, which I thought was so hysterically funny. Oh, my goodness.
You know, I think any form of communication with the spirit world is important. But you imagine this. You imagine if you was overseas and you was given the opportunity to either speak on the phone to a loved one who you hadn't seen for a long time, or you was given the opportunity to fly home and give them a hug, which one would you pick?
I'd rather hug them, but that's just exactly. me.
And that's the difference between physical mediumship and mental mediumship.
Yes.
Mental mediumship is equally as important because it creates a link with the spirit world.
Yes.
But also, physical mediumship was important because you get a physical touch, that physical communication from that loved one, from the spirit people. And, you know, how could someone not get excited about that, especially if you're in the spirit world and someone's giving you the opportunity and they're saying, well, look, you know, we know that your loved one is going to be at this place. You may have the possibility to communicate. You know, are you interested in coming along and experiencing that? That must create a lot of excitement in the spirit world. A lot of excitement.
I can't recall whether it was William or who it was that Wendy had heard this from, but she said that there were like 60 or 70 people who showed up because their loved ones would be sitting and they were desperate to be part of this group. And they had to be educated ahead of time about what was necessary and the fact not everybody could even do this. And then they were tested who was able to deal with the ectoplasm. Because remember, we are... When we are in the spirit world, we truly are in spirit. And in order for us to rematerialize here, we've got to remember what we look like, remember how our voice sounded, and use the ectoplasm to replicate who, you know, what we were, so that we're recognizable by our loved ones. This is something which is a skill like any other skill. Just as very few people can do what David can do, so relatively few, I gather, of our loved ones are able to do it. So, if a loved one comes through in a physical seance, this is someone who has put forth a lot of effort and been trained to do this and has been shown to be able to do materialization in order for them to even to be allowed in. That was news to me, and I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, Roberta, you know, it's like anything in life. Some people are better at some things than others. And, you know, I've William's told me, you know, on quite a few occasions in the past, he said to me that when we communicate, my friends in the spirit world who work with me, they are versed in it. They've used it, the ectoplasm. They've got used to the vibration that is needed to be able to communicate. So it's quite easy for them. It's like the practice makes perfect type of scenario. But when a spirit person, like a family member or someone new comes through and communicates, first of all, the main thing that they have to contend with, and something that we don't realise, is the dense vibration that we live in. And they have to come from a very fine vibration to a dense vibration to communicate. And they do take on and have to slow their vibration down to take on some of back of the physicality that they had when they was here upon the physical plane. And that must be like walking in concrete boots, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
It
swimming in concrete. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and then on top of that, they have to deal with the ectoplasm. And again, you know, the ectoplasm, it's described when they step into it that it clings to them like putting your hand in candy floss.
Oh.
It sticks to you and you just can't get it off.
Oh, wow. Ick.
And when the communication's finished, it's the actual controls, the guides of the circle that help to dematerialise the actual materialised form, because the person can't do that.
Isn't that?
And you know, it's ectoplasm.
Oh my goodness, candy floss. That's very unpleasant thinking. Oh wow!
You imagine being covered tight, or cling film. You imagine being covered in cling film.
Yes.
Tightly, and you have all these physical feelings that you had when you was here just before you passed, and you have all this dense vibration to contend with. And then you're expected to communicate clear and concisely. It must be very difficult.
And seem normal. You got to seem like Grandpa or whoever you were to the people in the room, or they're going to say it really wasn't you. Your voice has to sound the same. Now, if I can't imagine how it's possible to recreate the sound of one's voice. I don't even know how my voice sounds. So, to
exactly.
Others. So it's people who properly understand what it is that they're witnessing are in awe of this experience and what it takes to make it real and believable.
You know, Roberta, America has a rich history of physical mediumship. You know, Ethel Post Parrish, and there's a very well-documented photograph of her guide materialising, Silver Bell. And there was the Bang sisters who did precipitated art, again, Americans. So physical mediumship within America at one point was very, very prolific and very, 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 very documented. But I think it's like anything, over the years, we've lost the ability to be able to do this form of mediumship because people want what I call McDonald's mediumship. They want it yesterday.
Right, right.
They don't want to do the hard yards. And
there are a couple of serious issues with it. One is it takes a very long time of sitting in circle and patiently developing, allowing spirit to work with you to be developed as a medium before it happens and before it's reliable. I mean, I know some physical mediums in this country who are working now on being able to do, David, what you can do, and it's a very long process. How long has it taken you to get from where you started to where you are now?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've been doing mediumship for 32 years. I started at the age of 18.
Wow.
And I'm now 50. So the physical mediumship I've been doing now for, I'd say, a good 25 years.
Okay, and you're pretty darn good at it now, but it took, 25 years is a third of most people's lives that it's taken you to get to be at the level where you are now. Americans tend to be impatient by nature. It's hard to tell someone, well, you're young now, but you're going to be late middle age by the time you are, really very, very good at this. Most of us don't have that patience now.
Yeah, and it's a world over. Roberta, you know, it's a state of mind. I'm one of these people, particularly if I put my mind to doing something, then I will do it and I will see it through. And mediumship is one of my passions, so I see it through and I will continue. You know, even I like to think even with my mediumship, I'm only just touching the surface. You know, people say about, can you ever bring light into the seance room? Well, eventually, yes, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. You know, it has to be worked on, it has to be developed. And, you know, the way I see it is this. If for the next 20 years I'm to continue to develop my physical mediumship, and then for 1 year out of all of those years it's seen in the light, then we've achieved something more.
Oh, wow. You certainly are right about that, sir. Wow.
You know, we've achieved something we want. And imagine that legacy. You imagine the last year of doing this type of mediumship, it's done in lighted conditions for everyone to see the spirit. You imagine that, what it will leave. The legacy it will leave for the spirit world.
Yes, that is beautiful. Victor Zammit does believe that this it is physical mediumship in the end that will be the one impossible to deny proof that our minds are eternal. And I used to say, oh, Victor, that's not, there's other good stuff too, but now I understand his point, because it is so spectacular, and there's no way around it, and it's so carefully done that it can't be faked. So I think he may be right. But
Victor and Wendy Zammit, in my mind, are some of the foremost investigators into the afterlife today. And they certainly have a lot of knowledge and a lot of hours investigating physical mediumship. And, and they haven't limited it to my mediumship either. So they've experienced other physical mediums as well.
Yes. No, Victor and Wendy Zammit are the leading afterlife evidence experts in the world. There is nobody else who comes close. Their book, I should remind people, is A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife. It should be on every bookshelf of everybody who has the slightest interest in this stuff, because they write about all of it and very exhaustively. And now Wendy, wonderfully, is working on a book about physical mediumship and featuring David, which we sorely need, because there, the lack of knowledge of what this phenomenon involves naturally leads people to say, well, it can't be real. I just can't believe that can happen. But when people understand how exhaustively it's been investigated, when they understand why things have to be done as they're done and why it takes so long to develop, it's going to make a huge difference in the acceptability to everybody of what is really an extraordinary phenomenon. I mean, when you think about it, there are so many parts to it, David. There's the ectoplasm, there's the developing with and working with spirit to bring the spirits through, and there's, I mean, it's just an amazing show.
Yeah. You know, Roberta, in an ideal world, wouldn't it be good if we could say, look, everybody, come and experience this, but come with an open mind, you know, don't come and test, come as communion, come in communion with the spirit world,
yes,
and then you'll reap the benefits. Because, you know, some of the best physical mediums, like Minnie Harrison as one, they had materializations in by firelight. And the reason they had it is because it was just family members gathering together on a Saturday evening to communicate with their family in the spirit world. And it reaped the benefits and the rewards. There wasn't any expectation. And there wasn't any desire to want to examine, prod, poke the medium.
Yes. Yes.
And it was an amazing thing. It was,
yes,
an amazing thing that's documented, but very rarely sort of known about in this day and age.
I think that we're going to be able to get to that point as well. But let's talk a little bit more about it. So here we have this enormous man, William. You met William, and you sort of found out he had even been in your family, or in your life, rather, when you were a child, right?
Yeah, I used to see spirit people as a child. And, you know, I can remember seeing this man standing in my room and calling out to my mum and her coming and switching on the light, and there wasn't anyone there. And, you know, I started my mediumistic work when I was about 18 or 19. And I worked with a Chinese gentleman then for the first 5 years. And then William introduced himself, and, you know, we become friends, colleagues, and started working together. And I can remember about 7, 8, 9 years ago, I said to him, "Hey, William, why wasn't you there those first 5 years I started?" He said to me, "Can you remember that man you used to see in your room?" And all of a sudden, the penny dropped, and I thought, here is a man that's dedicated more years than I have to work with me. The least I can do is give him my best. And, you know, I respect him. And I don't think of him as a spirit guide, you know, or anything like that. I look at him as just a friend, a family member. To me, communicating with him is as natural as me talking to you now.
That's wonderful. And I understand that feeling. I urge everyone now to get to know their primary guide, because this is someone as close to you as inside your own skin. This is a very close person to you.
And, you know, we have a great understanding. You know, when I'm doing the mediumistic work, he's there with me. So if I go away, say, for 3 weeks, from the moment I get on an aeroplane to go to the place to the moment I get back off the aeroplane, when I come home, he'll be there with me, close by me. Any other time, he's never there. Unless it's important, he's never there.
You live your life, does he? Which is nice.
Like, as I'm talking to you now, I know he's there, but he's not. He's standing very much in the background and just listening and just, you know, enjoying, obviously, what's taking place. But he's not influencing. He's not controlling. You know, he's like a close dear friend.
Incidentally,
he passed in the late 1800s. And some people have tried to investigate his existence in the physical world. Now, I was pointed to a census once, and I've actually got a portion of that with his, which I believe to be him, on my website. But, you know, he's quite a private man, and I know he's quite a private man because quite a few years ago, he shared something with me about his life. It was personal to him, and I shared it with a couple of friends. And he got quite upset by that, and I could palpably feel his feeling of feeling let down by me. So, you know, we have an understanding. If he wants to share something with me about him personally, and he's okay with me sharing it with people, then I do that. If he's not, then I won't do that. So, you know, I don't have the full facts about William, and I know he hasn't given me the full facts. And I know that maybe he may have changed a few dates to protect his privacy and some anonymity. But, you know, his thoughts are, the important thing is the message of the Spirit, not who he is or who I am.
Yeah.
It's the message of the Spirit.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. That's beautiful. And I got to know him a little bit too, because you did a in full light going into trance one morning and and on a stage, and I was front row center. I just loved it. And there was William, who started to talk through you, and he answered questions from the room, and I found that really fascinating. And he talked a little bit about where he was and why he was doing what he was doing and how it was advancing him spiritually and where he intended to go with this. He's a different guy, and he happens to be very professionally and beautifully and lovingly managing your career, but he is a separate person. And I kind of got to know him a little bit. It was great.
You know, there's a standing joke between me and some of my close friends who are Circle members. They always say, there's no way, Dave, that you're the same person, because he's far more intelligent than you are.
He is a very bright man. And he's a very bright man, and he's quite sort of formal and strong. And but isn't that funny? You know, only your friends will say things like that to you, isn't it? Isn't it the way it always is?
I mean, we have some, you know, a lot of people have this very strange idea about me as a person. They have this tendency to maybe think that I'm some sort of special individual. But, you know, I'm the same as everybody else. I'm doing my bit as best as I can. And, you know, we have a bit of a joke. One of my friends calls me the Messiah because of how some people treat me sometimes. You know, it's quite crazy because I'm just a normal person who has a normal life, does normal things. You know, I get out of bed in the morning and I do my thing, and, you know, I change my baby son's nappies. We've got cats. I clean out the cat litter tray and things like that. You know, I'm just a normal person that's got an extraordinary ability, I suppose.
It is an extraordinary ability, and I was quite in awe of you after that performance where you went into trance, and I never approached you. And when I got to when we were getting ready to go into the seance room, you came up to me and you said, I just want to introduce myself, because Wendy said that I should, you know, I don't remember what Wendy said about me, but you said, any friend of Wendy's, I want to make a friend of mine. And I was just charmed. You have no idea how charmed I was by that.
Oh, most definitely, Roberta. You know, Wendy, both Victor and Wendy Zammit are beautiful people, and, you know, they're champions of the cause of the spirit world, and, you know, they're just good, honest, decent people. And, you know, I trust both of them with my life.
Well, I feel the same way. So we're, you know, a mutual admiration society we share this in common, that we just think that the Zammits are the best.
And as I say, any friend of theirs is a friend of mine.
That's what you said. I loved it. So what is the thing that you most want people to understand about what you do? Yes, you're a regular guy. And I think people will begin to understand better from what you said, that this is, for you, a lifelong commitment to developing something which maybe in 10 or 20 years will bear fruit that makes it all worthwhile. That's how you feel?
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely. You know, I believe in everything in life and what we do. There has to be a beginning and end goal. And ultimately, the goal is to prove without any doubts that the spirit world exists beyond physical death. And that should be the goal of every medium. I'm a very patient person. I'm a very diligent person, especially where mediumship's concerned. So conversely, I keep going, I keep toiling away. You know, I take the rough with the smooth. That's all part of life. When you put yourself out there working in the public domain, you know, not everybody's going to be particularly nice towards you in what you do, and sure. Some people will think that what you do is fraudulent. And you know, I always work on the level of the law of averages. If 95% of people that participate in the seances all over the world are positive and it's had a life-changing experience, and there's only 5% that are saying, well, I'm not sure about this, well, I'm doing the right thing.
You're
on behalf
playing
of
the averages. Yes, that's right. You can't please everyone, and the most important person to please is yourself.
Yep.
And I think the fact that you're willing to do this is all by itself something we ought to celebrate. The very process of being a physical medium is very hard on your body. As you know,
yes.
you aren't ignorant about the fact that it can cause health problems, right? What are those health problems that can come from what you do?
One of the main causes that unfortunately I haven't got this problem, but one of the main things that a lot of physical medium experience is diabetes, sugar diabetes, obviously because of the use of insulin, which and the pancreas for the ectoplasm. I personally have had twice. I've had kidney stones because obviously the body is the moisture in the body is part of the makeup of the ectoplasm. So that's not a very pleasant experience. And,
no.
You know, the second time I thought to myself, oh, my gosh. But, you know, the bigger picture is this. I'm only a small cog in a big wheel of the proof that the spirit world are trying to share with people. The beautiful and amazing reality of life exists beyond death. You imagine if the whole world knew this.
Oh, yes. Yes, imagine. It would change everything.
Exactly, and that, you know, that's my motivation. And you know, spiritually speaking, when you have that belief, when you have had that proof, it is the onus is on you as a spiritual individual, as an individual, to share that with other people. You know, and I've had experiences. When I first started physical mediumship, I started with a group of people who weren't spiritualists, weren't scientists. They were a group of people who had lost children, and all they wanted was to receive communication from their children, and each one of them did in that circle. And you know, the first materialization took place in that circle of a little girl, and I saw the change that it had upon those parents. How can someone have an ability like that and then not share it?
Oh, yes. That's beautiful. Yes.
You know, you just can't. You just, you know, the spirit world say that when we leave this physical world, you know, we see ourselves for the real person that we are. William said to me on numerous occasions, he said, when people come to our world, a lot of them are surprised as to the people that they really are versus the people that they thought they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we're in a physical body, we can hide as much as we want. But when we're devoid of the physical body, and we seem, not only do we see ourselves as we truly are, but others will see us as we truly are.
Yes.
And, you know, you imagine passing to the spirit world and believing that you're some holy, righteous and spiritual person, only to realise that you wasn't. And, you know, think of it from this point of view. If I have this ability and I suddenly thought to myself, oh, I can't share it, I don't want to share it, for whatever selfish means or for whatever reason, I would have to justify that to myself.
Yeah.
When I passed to the spirit world, when I saw myself and saw the potentiality of what I could have done versus what I did.
Oh, yes. Yep.
You know, it's just...
I think that that's absolutely beautiful, David. Thank you. And you know, you have many friends around the world and certainly in the United States who support
yeah.
you in what you do and just want to help you in every way that we can to do what you do and to get the word out about what you do. Because this is a phenomenon which needs to be better known and understood, because it is, as Victor says, it's probably the clearest bright line evidence that we have, really proof that we have, that our
yeah.
minds survive. So
yeah.
we've got to get it out there.
Yeah, I'm sure, Roberta, that there's many other people developing developing physical mediumship behind closed doors. But I think a lot of people start off with all good intent to actually use that ability and demonstrate that ability publicly, but in the end neglect to do so for fear of ridicule. You know, because it is a very confronting, different form of mediumship. And
yes,
and people do have this often strange perception upon the medium themselves. You know, some people quite often will approach me in a very meek fashion and want to speak to me, and they're surprised when I just talk to them and say, well, look, you know, yeah, no problem, and you know, and don't have this air of no. I'm better than you type of thing, which
yes,
some people do.
But I smile because having gotten to know you a bit in September, you're the most regular of regular guys, David, and that's another thing which is important about what you do. You make this not strange or exotic because you are such a charming regular person as opposed to someone with airs or someone who acts odd. I just loved being in your company. It was wonderful.
And I and yours, Roberta, and you know, all the glitz and glamour of some people upon where mediumship's concerned, it just kind of leaves a bit of a bad taste in my mouth. And I, as an individual, I often try and put myself in a position of someone who may have lost a child and think, well, what would they be thinking if they saw all this glitz and glamour and all this stuff that was never really giving them the proof that they were seeking?
Yes.
You know, they want people that they can approach, talk to and say, you know, look, I lost my son or I lost my daughter and I'm so desperate. How can they do that to someone who's putting themselves in this idealistic light of being untouchable?
Yes. No, I agree with you. I think the hardest thing for people who become well known is keeping touch with who they really are. And as you point out, yeah, that's absolutely essential for the sake of those they want to help, and even perhaps more for the sake of themselves. If you gain the whole world and lose your own soul, where's the good in that? That's that's very true.
And you know, the most frightening thing about it is, it's when the ego becomes bigger than your mediumship and you don't see that and you don't realize that, you cease to be a medium anymore.
Yeah, people lose you. That's true. People lose their gifts when they lose touch with the core that allowed them to develop to begin with. I could talk to you forever, David. I just love talking with you. We're coming to the end of our time, though, and I would love to have you tell people how they can. What's your website? How can they learn more about you?
Okay, well, my website's www.circleofthesilvercord.net, and I also I'm actually doing a as I briefly mentioned earlier, I'm doing a seminar with some other reputable teachers at a college called the Swanoth College. That's Zwan Hof College in Holland. We're doing a trance and physical week in December, and that's going to be quite exciting because all the participants who attend will obviously have the opportunity to sit in a seance as well as learn and understand and be taught by very accomplished tutors. So, yes, that's...
Will there be a link from your website so people can learn about that? That's great.
Yep, it's advertised on my website, but it's also on the links page of Swanoff Colleges there. So it's a beautiful place, and it's set in the countryside in an old monastery. It's an amazing place, and you know, it's run by two very amazing people, and there's an amazing teaching team there, and it's beautiful. I love going there. So yeah, they can attend that if they're interested, and
Well, I'm going to want to talk to you again. I think we've barely scratched the surface, and now we've come to the end of our time. I just want to say this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Of course, if you want to learn more about the things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, and older ones are available on iTunes. Just search for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Of course, you know my nonfiction books, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, Liberating Jesus, and the wonderful Flying High in Spirit. You'll find details about all my books and my blog at robertagrimes.com. Next week, our guest will be Donna Vysocki, whose beautiful book, I'll Meet You at the Base of the Mountain, One Woman's Journey from Grief to Life, examines the transformational power of loss. I usually don't talk much about grief here, but grief is an important part of life, and we learn and grow from it. Even though it's a temporary separation, the separation is something we have to deal with. So you're going to love meeting Donna. Please join us. And this week, we've been speaking with the extraordinary David Thompson. He is one of the world's only, count them on a few fingers of one hand, only fully developed physical mediums who are willing to sit publicly. And he does it at the risk of his life, although he's very unassuming about that. Dear friends, it is so easy for each of us to disparage or dismiss whatever is beyond our little circle of awareness, whatever seems strange. But this is a beautiful time of discovery and growth for all of humankind. Right now, we are all privileged to be alive as the spirit world is working to raise the consciousness of everybody on this planet. And we're part of it. And it's your task and mine to open our minds, open our hearts to the manifold ways in which spirit now is revealing itself in the world. David Thompson is one of the wonderful people who are working hard to bring to us this beautiful awareness of the depths of spirit's gifts. We can no longer ignore what he's doing and what he's telling us. So please join me in sharing the joy of getting to know better what it is that David can do. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.